This is Basketball U.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app.
Welcome on in. This is the Basketball U podcast. I'm Tyler Rocky. We're with you two times a week, recapping the biggest things going on in college basketball, getting you ready for some of the big games every single weekend. And boy, there's some great ones this week. I'll do that a little bit later on this week. But today we are recapping the Champions Classic. We'll talk with John Fanta from Fox Sports as well as the Field of 68. He was at the Champions Classic, boots on the ground in Indy. He'll give us all of his impressions. But before we get into any of that, I want to give you a little bit of what I saw yesterday from the Champions Classic and also some other notes from around college basketball. I'll do that after I talk with John. But just starting with the Champions Classic yesterday, boy, what a breath of fresh air it was for college basketball. You know, it's been some pretty lackluster games, not necessarily lackluster results over the last week or so, but some lackluster games, not a lot of matchups that really get you intrigued, pretty much until we had the aircraft carrier game last week on Friday night with Gonzaga taking on Michigan State, which was a great game. Great game from both sides. You saw Gonzaga have the comeback with Drew Timmy, and I think you saw the familiarity aspect of college basketball really shine in that game. Having a guy who the entire sport, the entire fan base knew, go out and put together those dominant final five or so minutes to help Gonzaga secure a victory, thought was really good for the sport, was really good for Gonzaga as well, a team that I think some people do have some doubts for. But I think some of those doubts may be quelled by what they saw in the Champions Classic last night. Michigan State played a fantastic game in their win against Kentucky, the number four team in the country. And I think you can take away positives from both teams in this game. Obviously, Michigan State, you come out with a top five win here early on in the season. You get phenomenal performances in double overtime. Joey Hauser shot the lights out. Malik Hall was great. Matty Sissoko, another fantastic game from him. He goes 16-8 in this one. And he had a little bit of a steadying force as well from Tyson Walker, their point guard who transferred in from Northeastern a couple years ago. He has 14 points to go along with six assists in this game. And I thought really calm this team down. And then Malik Hall, of course, with the big dunks to kind of secure things in regulation as well as in overtime and make sure that Michigan State fought to see another day. On the other side of things, Oscar Tshiebwe, 22-14 in his first game of the season. He came off the bench in this one and still played 34 minutes. There are two shining stars in this one for me. Obviously, Oscar Tshiebwe. He was fantastic in this game and put a nice start to his defense of the National Player of the Year. And that, again, kind of like what I mentioned earlier with Timmy, it's great for the sport to have that familiarity aspect to it and to have a guy as dominant as Oscar is back in the sport, NIL certainly playing a huge factor in that, and also Kentucky really believing in him. Another reason why. People forget this, too, with Oscar Tshiebwe. It wasn't like last year was some sort of one and done. He was a freshman and came in and dominated in his first year at Kentucky and didn't want to go one and done to the draft. No, this is a guy who started his career at West Virginia, played pretty well at West Virginia too, before transferring on over to Kentucky and just saw his stardom get put on a new pedestal. He was fantastic in this game, fouled out at the end. That really was the end of it for Kentucky. Felt like they really ran out of gas there. And maybe if they have Tshiebwe, they end up victorious in this game, but you got to credit the Spartans' resiliency and what they did down the stretch. It wasn't like they were leading this game wire to wire and let it slip away, sort of like what we saw on the ship against Gonzaga. This was a completely different basketball game than that. It was actually Michigan State the one that was punching back and continuing to punch back. And I don't know if Michigan State wins this game if they don't play that early season test against Gonzaga on Friday. I really don't. I think that taught them a lot of what they needed to do and how to execute in late game situations. Because in this game, they didn't need to execute in just one late game situation. They had to execute in three. The end of regulation, the end of overtime, and then again to seal things out in double overtime once they did fall out Tshiebwe. That, to me, showed A, what kind of coach Tom Izzo is, and B, the veteran leadership on this team. A lot of returning guys on this Michigan State team. All five starters are members of last year's team. And in this day and age of college basketball, you can't say that about a lot of teams. So the other star that I really want to take away from this one, from the Kentucky side of things, Cason Wallace, freshman, he's going to be a stud. He's going to be an all-SEC, probably first teamer when it's said and done. He has 14 points in this one, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, very balanced effort. But defensively, getting after it as well. He's got that long wingspan that really helps him. But 8 steals in this game. For a freshman, when the lights are the biggest, sometimes you just think, can they answer the call offensively? Can they be that guy in crunch time offensively? But every single coach wants to see what these guys can be defensively. And Coach Cal certainly saw someone that stepped up on the defensive end in Cason Wallace. He has 8 steals. He did turn the ball over 3 times in this game, but when you're stealing the ball 8 times, certainly making up for a lot of those miscues on the offensive end there. So lots to like there from both sides of things. On the other side of this, the late game, the game that probably pissed off every single college football fan. Actually, that was the first game that pissed off every single college football fan because it created that buffer waiting for the college football playoff rankings. Usually it syncs up where the first release of the playoff rankings is also the Champions Classic, and you got Reese Davis and the crew, Kirk Herbstreit, out there for the Champions Classic in Indy. But for some reason, not the case this year with college basketball pushing things back a little bit and the college football playoff already in their 3rd or 4th iteration. But Kansas, the defending national champions, the number 6 team in the country, takes down Duke 69-64. It looked like the Jayhawks were going to run away with this game early on. You saw Grady Dick go out and have a fantastic first half. And then in the second half, you saw Duke really start to target him and try to get all over him and make sure he had to play both ends of the floor. And it got to the point where the interim head coach, Norm Roberts, wasn't able to play Grady. And they pulled him off the floor for a long stretch in that second half because he couldn't play on the defensive end. It was kind of a shock to him seeing all that 5-star talent on the other end for Duke. But there was that calming presence. You had not one but 2 coaches on the floor in Jalen Wilson and Daywon Harris out there. Harris with 10 assists, a lot of them coming in those final moments where he's lobbing up for Grady Dick. He's making some nice cross-court passes. He's doing things that championship-level point guards do. And that, to me, was one of the biggest things with this Kansas team, who did lose some important pieces from a season ago with Oshai Agbaji and David McCormick, 2 very, very integral pieces to winning a national championship. But here comes Daywon Harris and the return of Jalen Wilson as well, who has a career-high 25 points, also pitches in 11 rebounds in this game. Those guys putting together that performance, that right there, you see returning pieces from a national championship team on one side, and you see not a lot of returners on the other side with Duke. Now, Duke, I'm still very high on heading into this season. In fact, I think I'm even more confident now in Duke, knowing that Dariq Whitehead, the number 2 player in the entire country in the latest recruiting class, isn't even playing in this game, and you're still going toe-to-toe with the reigning national champions. I thought that Ryan Young looked very overmatched in this game. Very, very overmatched. He turned the ball over 4 times, and it wasn't like he was alone in turning the ball over. Every single Duke starter had at least 3 turnovers in this game. But Derek Lively, who's still probably getting his legs under him, he's the number 1 player in the country in the latest recruiting class. He plays 21 minutes in this game, puts forth 5 rebounds, but it felt like he was making more of an impact on the game when he was out there as opposed to when Ryan Young was out there. Ryan was coughing the ball up. He was getting beat on defense. He was getting beat on a lot of rebounds, sometimes even by smaller players like Daywon Harris on the other end. He's losing the rebounding battle to some guards, and I think it really hurt this Duke team in the end. They looked like a completely different basketball team when Derek Lively was on the floor, and I do want to see more of that because The two bigs that this Duke team has with Kyle Filipowski and Derek Lively, two freshmen, young guys, but they look like they'll be a big-time force, especially in an ACC that looks really, really bad right now. So looking forward to seeing what Duke does this season. But again, I think for John Shire, his first time in a big game atmosphere as the head coach of Duke, I know he didn't win, but it felt like he passed. He passed the test. And unfortunately for his team, just too many turnovers, really too many turnovers on both sides. You had Duke with 18, Kansas with 15. I think it's going to certainly patch itself up on the Kansas side of things, but certainly going to need to fix itself on the Duke side as well. All right, for more on this game and this matchup, let's turn things over to John Fanta. We are joined now by one of the most electric personalities in the entire sport from Fox Sports, as well as the Field of 68, co-host of the Douster T.O. and Fanta podcast, John Fanta, joining us here on Basketball U. Fresh off the plane, all the way back from Indy. He was at the Champions Classic yesterday, and he's kind enough to make some time for us here. John, thanks for joining us here today.
Tyler, it's great to be with you. It's such a fun time of year, and the Champions Classic, to me, is like a holiday for college basketball. Yes. As much as the opening week of the season was the opening week, let's face it, the matchups paled in comparison to what we witnessed Tuesday night inside Gainbridge Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. Now you really feel like college hoops is here, and that's the perfect momentum ahead of Thanksgiving week, which seemingly always delivers.
Absolutely. You get a hefty dose of feast week in you, and it is college basketball nirvana. So you brought up the lackluster early schedule, and I think that's something where usually it feels like the Champions Classic is sort of the kickoff to college basketball, sometimes even the first day of the season. But I tweeted yesterday that, you know, I'll take that lackluster week of matchups if it means we get a Champions Classic as epic as we got last night.
Absolutely. And for what it's worth, like, I don't think that the first week was totally uneventful, because it wasn't. On opening night, Stetson beats Florida State. Stetson ends up coming up with multiple wins to start the season. They beat South Florida as well to begin their season 2-0. Like, in what world does that happen? College basketball is where it happens. Mm-hmm. Sam Houston beats Oklahoma, shocking the Sooners on opening night. Grambling beating Colorado was wild. Then Colorado turns around and beats Tennessee.
Yep. So who crushed Gonzaga in a scrimmage.
Who crushed Gonzaga in a scrimmage, which just shows you any conclusion that you have on a team, forget about it. Forget about it, because this is college basketball. So I think where the sport, though, can create some more buzz in the first week is something that I brought up last week, and that is the 24-hour marathon to tip off the year that we grew up with. You and I, when we were growing up, we would watch that 24-hour marathon. We'd wake up. I remember waking up to watch a game at like 7 a.m. before going to school, because I just thought it was cool that a game was on.
Right, yeah.
To me, Tyler, that 24-hour marathon is a great way to ring in the new season, but also a way to give programs that don't always get the attention some love.
Yeah.
Some love. An opportunity to get on ESPN, an opportunity to get on a mainstream broadcasting network. So I think that there's ways that it could be adjusted, that opening week schedule, and I do think that the 24-hour marathon, the return of it would be epic. And the 24-hour marathon really existed without social media. Just think of all the crazy tweeters who are going to, you know, stay up for a whole 24-hour marathon. I think there's possibilities there. But I think for college basketball, if you wait until March to follow this sport, I feel bad for you.
Yes.
Because the product is really good. The games are good. The drama is there. You could talk about shot making. And in the Champions Classic, the perimeter shot making was not good. Mm-hmm. But the late game execution, the ability to by some of these kids to just step up and make plays. Grady Dick for Kansas, unbelievable for a guy that comes in with 5 minutes left in the game as a freshman and steps up huge. For Michigan State, Malik Hall, time and time again with big time dunks. So for me, like, college basketball is in a healthy place.
Yes.
College basketball is in a good place. Now that opening week can be adjusted, whether it's a tip-off marathon or some sort of event that gets mid-majors involved. I'd be interested in that. But if it means that we just have to wait 8 days to get the Champions Classic, like, folks, stop complaining just for the sake of complaining.
I mean, even it feels like the whole Midnight Madness thing is subdued at this point. And I think that was one of those magical sort of days for college basketball. And I don't know. I think it would be cool to kind of have a red zone type deal where, okay, ACC Network is carrying all these different Midnight Madnesses across the ACC. You get it with the Big Ten Network. Get all these. I mean, every conference, it feels like, has a network at this point. Just do a little whip around show. I feel like that would be awesome to get the sport going. And that's even in October then.
I think that you're exactly right. Midnight Madness used to be the event to tip off college basketball season. And Tyler, like, sometimes the sport gets in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's stopping the sport from doing that, from instituting that? From saying to the, at least the high major programs, hey, we are going to have our television partner. Let's just say, let's think really outside the box. Here's a outside the box idea. Turner Sports and CBS have this massive deal with the NCAA for the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm the NCAA, I'm looking for ways to build up my student athletes, build up my coaches. Would Turner ever go for, ever, hey, you're going to do Celtics Warriors at 7:30,
mm-hmm.
at 7:30 on TNT, you know, or you reverse it and do like 8:30 and then have it be before 7:30 TNT, Celtics, Warriors. You're not going to do a second game. It's early in the season. Attached off that, you're going to do an hour long college basketball season preview show with your crew that does the tournament, March Madness.
Right.
You're going to go live shots to campuses. With, you know, different campuses have music artists. Like, make it a scene. Make it fun. Make it a party. There are ways that we could build the awareness of the sport. And I think this is something that some of the top coaches in the sport, who are typically the guardians of the game, we call them, you know, Tom Izzo, John Calipari, now Mark Few.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are the guys who have to kind of come together and figure out what's a way to build our sport a little bit more up during opening week. Because, Tyler, opening week in any sport, even baseball, which has trouble marketing itself, opening week is a big deal for them. It's a big deal for all of us. Like, you don't want to start your season on a Monday, then have election day, and then, like, the momentum of it, it just got lost there by day three. And I'm a college hoops junkie, and I could kind of feel it. I just think there's got to be a better way. And the Champions Classic used to be the first night of the season. That's not going to be anymore. But why not be creative? And let's get some of the mid-major programs involved in some sort of a tip-off extravaganza, if you will, and shine light on all different teams across the country.
I'm right there with you. And we say all this, the sport's in a great spot right now, especially when you look at the returning talent. It was certainly on display last night. So let's get into a little bit of last night's games. We'll start with the double overtime thriller. I think the game that pissed off every single college football fan out there because it went to double OT and pushed back the playoff coverage. But it was an epic start to the Champions Classic. Oscar Tshiebwe, of course, fouls out, but I mean, Michigan State, they've played two really tough games here out of the stretch. They're really challenging themselves here to open up this season. When you look at going on the aircraft carrier and playing that neutral site against Gonzaga, this neutral site against Kentucky, I don't know about you, John, but do you feel like Michigan State wins this game if they don't play that game against Gonzaga?
Probably not. Probably not, because their late game execution on offense was different from the game against Gonzaga. That final sequence against Gonzaga for Michigan State left a lot to be desired. They learned from that and they came ready. They were the more prepared team. They were the better coach team. They were the more balanced team. And that was on display in this game. AJ Hogard came up with big assist after big assist. I believe he had 9 assists on the night in this game. He was huge for Michigan State at delivering some key passes. Joey Hauser told me in October, Tyler, that he felt like this team was getting disrespected. Even at Media Day, someone said to Michigan State, you know, you guys had some struggles last year, and Hauser looked at Malik Hall and was like, at Media Day, they basically were looking at each other like, we are so tired of hearing about Michigan State struggling. We want to change that narrative. And the narrative coming into the season was, they didn't get any better in the offseason. Izzo didn't go out and get transfers. He doesn't know how to build a roster in 2022. He's old school. He should retire. Michigan State's not a blue blood anymore. This, that, everything else. Tom Izzo got choked up after this game because his team beat a top five Kentucky team where all throughout the summer we're like, John Calipari lost to St. Peter's, but John Calipari is crushing the summer. Kentucky's crushing the summer. Kentucky has the best recruiting class next year with DJ Wagner now highlighting it. Well, guess what? You can recruit all the guys you want. If you don't have experience and depth, you're not going to win in college basketball. Tom Izzo stayed committed to himself. He stayed committed to his roots. Some people don't like that. Some people hate what he says about the transfer portal. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I'll say this, Tyler. Last night was a program win for Michigan State. It was a much-needed win, and they don't win that game. They don't win that game if they don't play that game on the aircraft carrier. I thought that they shot the ball significantly better, which is obvious when you play outdoors in an uncontrolled environment.
And there's not the sun beating down on you.
Sure, but I thought that Mati Sissoko has been a revelation here early in the year. Tyler, at the five spot, Michigan State, so inexperienced. Nothing really there outside of Mati Sissoko in terms of returnees. He has elevated his game, and when Oscar Tshiebwe fouled out, Sissoko put the game away last night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was the biggest thing. When you have the ability to foul out a guy like Oscar Tshiebwe, I mean, this is the year of so many dominant bigs being within the sport, and you take out arguably the most dominant of them all, the reigning national player of the year, really sent a statement to me, and I agree with you. I think Michigan State is getting disrespected, especially with the way that they've handled this early portion of the season, nearly taking down Gonzaga and then doing it against Kentucky there. That was really impressive to me. But listen, it doesn't stop there for Michigan State. When you look at the road ahead, they've got a game against Villanova, then a neutral site against Alabama, then Notre Dame. I mean, this is going to be a really tough opening stretch for Michigan State. But I'm happy to see Tom Izzo go out, challenges guys early on, because I think, quite frankly, they probably need it too.
Yeah, they do, and it is the most insane non-conference schedule that Izzo's ever put together. Was it a little bit too much? Probably, but I commend him for it. The sport needs more of it. Tom's not afraid to play anybody, and Joey Hauser said it last night after the game. He said, look, we'll play anybody, anytime, anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's, Tyler, that's the mentality you want to have when you arrive at March. Now, you said it, Villanova on Friday. It's a Villanova team that is reeling. It's actually going to be, of the three games here in this stretch for Michigan State, it looks like the easiest on paper because they're at home and they're facing a Villanova team that doesn't have Cam Whitmore.
Mm-hmm.
At least doesn't have him at 100%. And if we see him play any minutes Friday, that would be an eyebrow raiser, but we'll see. And doesn't have Justin Moore and doesn't have Jay Wright. So it doesn't have Colin Gillespie anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So for Michigan State, they've got the experience edge. They've got the home court advantage. They should win this game. Then you go into the Phil Knight. And like you said, I mean, that is a loaded field next week in Portland. They actually could meet. They could meet Villanova again in that event, which is kind of funny. But North Carolina's in their bracket. Mm-hmm. You talked about it with Alabama. Iowa State's there. Like, that is a loaded, loaded field at the Phil Knight Invitational. And for Michigan State, as long as they can, like, the only concern I would have is that this schedule could cause you to go on a three-game losing streak. It just could.
Yeah.
It just could. What you don't want to see is, and their experience, but what you don't want to see, Tyler, is them get worn down, and then you know how much of a gauntlet the Big Ten is.
Right.
Like, the Big Ten might not be as good as it was last year, but Big Ten basketball is a war. Every single night, you got to put up with Zach Edey on one night. You got to put up with Trace Jackson Davis the next. That's the only area I worry. But I thought that on Tuesday night, Michigan State showed what experience and balance means, and they showed what coaching means. I mean, let's face it, John Calipari took accountability after the game. Tyler, Kentucky was in position to win that game, And 246 nights after they lost to St. Peter's at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, their nightmares came back in Indianapolis. Kentucky and Indy do not go well together.
No, it does not. Real quick, one last note on Kentucky, and then we'll move on to the other game here. But Oscar Tshiebwe making his season debut last night. Were you surprised that there was no rust, it appeared, from Oscar Tshiebwe?
Not at all. Not at all. I think Cal strategically did this to hide him a little bit, to get him at, you know, 110%, if you will. I think he could have played the last game if he really wanted to, if it was the last game of his career. No, I don't think so. I mean, I wasn't surprised. In the first minute that he was on the floor, he had a bucket and three rebounds. And it's like, this guy, he's a stat sheet stuffer, but he knows where he needs to be on the floor at all times. Staying out of foul trouble is the key for Oscar. Oscar's ability to shoot the basketball has gotten better. He had a 15-footer last night, and it looked very, very good. Look, Tom Izzo said, Kentucky fans, do not jump the ship. I would say the same. I still think Kentucky can win it all this year. I really do. They have to piece it together, though. They need C.J. Frederick, Antonio Reeves to shoot the basketball better. They can't just disappear in the game. But to me, Tyler, Kentucky might have the best freshman in college basketball, and his name is Cason Wallace. He is incredible. He had 8 steals in this game on Tuesday night. I fully believe in him and think he's going to make a lot of money, and I think Kentucky's just scratching the surface. Kentucky needs to figure out what they're going to do late in games. It can't just be Sevier Wheeler trying to make a play. Because I thought on Tuesday night, Sevier Wheeler got exposed. He's a really good player. He's not an All-American. When you're a really good player, you got to find other really good players to make things happen. It can't be hero ball. And that's the one knock on Cal. Kentucky plays too much hero ball as well at times. And I'm not talking about Tyler. I'm talking about they play too much hero ball where they're not kicking it out and not making things happen.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the other game from last night. Kansas takes down Duke 69-64. Each of these teams gave up critical leads. You saw Kansas get out to the big hot early start, and then you see Duke watch a 5-point lead melt down the stretch here. But it really was Grady Dick kind of coming out party to America. He was silent in that first, 17 or so minutes of the second half. I mean, you really saw Duke go at him and try to expose him defensively. But then you saw Kansas trusted him down the stretch, put him in for those final 3 minutes, and boy, did he win them a basketball game.
He turned a light switch on in closing time. Really impressive from a freshman.
On both sides, too.
On both sides. And I thought that Grady Dick got exposed defensively for a portion of the game. It wasn't for a lack of trying. I thought it was an eye-opening experience for him. Duke got to a point, Tyler, where they said, you know what? The three is not falling tonight. It didn't fall for either team. The two teams were 4 for their first 35 in this game. So Duke said, you know what? We got to get to the rim. We got to put pressure on Kansas's defense and get to the rim. And what's Kansas's flaw? No more Dave McCormick. They don't have a true 5. Yeah. Like, they're trying to piece this together right now with Ernest Uday and KJ Adams. They're going smaller, and frankly, it didn't work. And that's how Kyle Filipowski just took off. And by the way, Kyle Filipowski was the second best freshman, if he wasn't the best one overall in the game, because he broke out. But I thought it reveals all you need to know about Kansas. They didn't play pretty. It wasn't glamorous. Their head coach isn't on the sidelines. But sometimes it says all you need to know about your organization when the leader of the program is not around. How do you figure out a way to win? And Grady Dick said this postgame, and Norm Roberts, who filled in for Bill Self, said this. He felt Jalen Wilson and Dewan Harris's calm and cooling nature in closing time. Mm-hmm. Kansas has those dudes who have been on the national championship level. Outside of Jeremy Roach, Duke does not. Duke does not have that experience factor. They went through more roster overhaul than anybody in college basketball, not to mention their first leader of the program, new leader, in 42 years. I thought Duke's inexperience showed late. It's a learning experience for them. And for Kansas, their championship medal came out in them in the last couple of minutes. And Grady Dick could do what he did because he's entered a program that knows how to win. He knows how to win. And Jalen Wilson and Dewan Harris take up so much attention from a defense that at some point you're going to give up an open look. If you leave Grady Dick open, guess what? He's going to make you pay. Yeah. He is an elite catch and shoot option.
You know, you mentioned, yeah, you don't have your coach on the sideline. It felt like you had two on the floor, though, with Wilson and with Harris. Those were some big time plays. I mean, it's not necessarily going to show up as much with Dewan Harris, but he made some really nice passes there down the stretch that I thought, I mean, the lob up to Grady Dick, he made some really nice plays down the stretch that certainly helped them win that basketball game. On the flip side for Duke, now, you brought up Kyle Filipowski. He was one of the biggest eye-openers of the entire event for me. And yes. I was very high on him coming in. Obviously, a top five guy, tough not to be. But he showed that he can bully guys down low. He can stretch out and take a three. I feel confident in him doing a lot of really, really important things on the basketball floor. And I think that he's going to be one of those guys where we're going to get to draft time and we're going to remember a lot of these sort of performances that he had over the course of the year, because he may be the most impactful guy out there on the floor.
Well, I think for Kyle Filipowski, Tyler, coming into the season, there were some reports, there was talks out there that he was having a bit of a tough time in the preseason. It just goes to show you, don't form a judgment on someone based on practices in October.
Yep.
Because he's game ready. This is the list of Duke freshmen to start their season with three consecutive double-doubles. Kyle Filipowski, that's the end of the list. That's incredible. Yeah. Think of all the great Duke players. Think of Zion. Think of Marvin Bagley. You go right down the line. Think of Paolo. None of them started their freshman season with three straight double-doubles, and they're legit double-doubles.
Yeah.
He's a really good rebounder. He gets after it. He's not afraid to take contact. He went at the rim. I was super, super impressed with Filipowski in this game. I think Derek Lively, clearly, Tyler, was trying to figure himself out in this game. I think Mark Mitchell's a good player and is only going to continue to get better. But Filipowski, to me, fits today's basketball, has an ability to get up and down. He defended well. He made little things happen. And John Shire, the body language of Shire around Filipowski tells you how much Shire loves Kyle Filipowski. Duke, if Duke finds shooting outside of Jeremy Roach, that's why Tyrese Proctor's so big. That's why Jacob Grandison, who disappeared, he can't disappear. Yeah. If Duke, Tyler, what kind of pressure would it put on somebody defensively if you have Filipowski and Lively and you got Roach, Proctor, Mitchell, Grandison making shots from the perimeter? If Duke hits perimeter shots, they could be the toughest team to beat in college basketball. John Shire said in the Champions Classic, you learn more about yourself sometimes when you lose. Yeah. And like sometimes it's tongue-in-cheek. I really believed him, though. I believed him here. I think for Duke, I consider this a positive for them. They were down 11 early. Did it not look like they could get blown out? And they hung in. And Filipowski was a huge reason for it.
You know, the Twin Towers aspect of Lively as well as Filipowski. How many times did you see in that game where one of those guys is going up for a layup, they miss it, but then there's the other one to just put it back? I mean,
it reminds
me a lot of when they had Bagley and Carter a couple of years ago. It's those Twin Towers out there that you're going to cause a lot of issues on both ends. And I'm really excited to see this Duke team this year. John, thanks so much for joining us here. Appreciate you for hopping on here. You can find him, Fox Sports 1. He's calling pretty much every single game out there. You can also check him out, the Douster TO and Fanta podcast as well. John, appreciate you. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll talk soon.
Yes, Tyler, let's do it again soon. I cannot wait. Cannot wait for Feast Week ahead.
Makes two of us, and I think a lot more as well. Thanks so much, John. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, awesome stuff with John. Be sure to check out all of his work. He is fantastic, whether it's play-by-play, analysis. You can catch him, subscribe to the Douster TO and Fanta podcast as well as check out his work on FS1 and Fox Sports, calling games, writing pieces. He is one of the best in the entire business. Love my conversations with John Fanta. All right, I want to get into some other stuff here, just some quick hitting stuff. I like to call this segment the one and done, where I lay out some topics, some things that maybe aren't top of mind, but I do have a thought on them that I want to get out there. These are some of my one and done thoughts from the college basketball week.
One and done.
My guys.
Obviously, we have one in our conference. Has a doctorate degree in one and done, right?
All right, let's start in the state of Michigan here, where I don't think people were expecting a lot of Eastern Michigan basketball talk, but you may be getting a hefty dose of it now after what Amani Bates did. Yes, Amani Bates, the former number one player in the country, transferred to Eastern Michigan this past offseason after a lackluster showing at Memphis, didn't play a lot last year, and it was sort of a mystery as to why. But a lot of mysteries answered, and you could see why he was the number one player in the 2021 recruiting class. Goes out, drops 30 points on Michigan on the road. It was a hell of a game from Amani Bates, and it was so good to see him out there just genuinely having fun playing basketball. You know, he's playing with way less talent than he was at Memphis, and he got to really go out there and show why he was a star. It looked like Eastern Michigan was going to pull this thing off. They led at the half and were leading for a good portion of the second half. Ultimately, Michigan pulls away at the end, but I'm extremely pleased with what I saw out of Amani Bates, and he's certainly going to put himself back into the conversation to be a lottery pick for next year. Next up, we go to the ACC, and I think I could do a one and done on pretty much every single team within this conference because they have been the biggest disappointment in all of college basketball here in the early portions. And that's not to say Duke, because I think they're exempt from this conversation here, but you look at what's been happening in the ACC here in the early portions of the season. Let's just start with the Louisville Cardinals. 0-3 to start the season. And Louisville, here in 2022, has lost all three of those games to start the Kenny Payne era by exactly 1 point. It has not gone well for the Louisville Cardinals, looking like one of the biggest disasters in college basketball here to open up the season. You go back to, it was Tuesday, and they take on App State. They lose this one 61-60. Here are the three teams Louisville has lost to so far. Bellarmine, Wright State, App State. All by a margin of 1 point. It has not gone well for Kenny Payne to open things up and to add insult to injury. You heard John talk a little bit about it earlier, but they lose out on the number one recruit for next season in DJ Wagner, picking Kentucky. Now, you look at the business model here, and you can kind of see the breadcrumbs and how they led to Kentucky. First of all, Milt Wagner, the grandfather of DJ Wagner, on the staff at Louisville. One of those Michael Porter Jr. situations, the Danny Manning situations where you bring in the family member to try to get the kid. Saw it with Cade Cunningham a couple years ago as well at Oklahoma State. And Louisville doesn't get the guy. They don't get DJ Wagner, despite bringing in his grandfather, Milt Wagner. Also, DJ Wagner recently signed a lucrative NIL deal with Nike. Now, Louisville, an Adidas school. This is going to be one of the really interesting things to see. It almost gives me shades of the Marcus Jordan when he went down to play at UCF, but he wanted to wear all Air Jordan stuff, obviously, because of who his father was. And there was that messy situation with UCF being an Adidas school and Marcus Jordan being the son of Michael Jordan. It was really a fascinating sort of twist down there. I'm going to be intrigued to see how this plays out with name, image, and likeness being tied to athletic wear brands and how that impacts maybe decisions. And is it just going to be kind of like we see that everything tied up in this Adidas scandal right now? Is it just going to be a legalized version of that? Very well could be. But Louisville, maybe the worst week of basketball in Louisville. Actually, I'm not even going to dig through the history. If there's a week worse than this, then that is really shocking to me for Louisville basketball. Losing three games by 1 point, losing out on the number one recruit, and it all starts with this. And I know some people may be saying, oh, well, the Rick Pitino week was worse than this. This is Louisville basketball losing to three mid-majors in the span of a week and also losing out on the number one recruit in the country with his grandfather on staff. It doesn't get worse than that. From an on-court standpoint, it does not get worse than that. So really tough stuff there for Louisville. How about another team that's really struggling out of the ACC, and that is the Florida State Seminoles, kind of following a similar trajectory here to Louisville. They are also 0-3 to open up the season, losing to three mid-major, or depending on what you want to call UCF, out of the AAC. But you lose opening night to Stetson, you lose the following game to UCF, and then you lose on Monday to Troy. What is happening to Leonard Hamilton's team? It just doesn't look like the same group that he's used to having out there. Usually, he's a guy who can cycle in a bunch of seven-footers. This year, only one guy at 7 foot, although he does maybe make up for some of the size. Naheem McLeod, 7'4", but this team reeling early on, and I don't know if it's going to get better there. How about my Syracuse Orange losing to Colgate? This was an ugly game, and not just that, but they've lost to Colgate now 2 years in a row and have lost the battle of supremacy in Central New York. This Colgate team just knows how to catch fire against Syracuse. The defense clearly is not there for Jim Boeheim's team. Colgate goes 19 for 38. Even though Syracuse did flip to a little bit of man-to-man in this game, 19 of 38, they shot the lights out from three in this one. Syracuse on the other side just going 8 for 25, and this is going to be a team that, if the youth doesn't step up, they're going to have themselves a long, long season ahead, because this is a very, very young Syracuse team. They do have some talent. I like what I've seen out of Judah Mintz so far in the early going. He had 20 points as a freshman, but if they don't figure out some of the other pieces off of the bench, this is not going to be one of those cardiac Syracuse teams that we are used to seeing. You know, they're 3-0 right now, but I think a lot of people asking some questions because of the close nature of the games that they've played. They really haven't just beaten the brakes off of anyone. And that's North Carolina, the number one team in the country. You know, Carolina, they win their opener 69-56. Game played a little bit closer than that. Against Charleston, 102-86. Game still played a little bit closer than that. And then last night, they beat Gardner-Webb 72-66. And maybe they played a little bit more, they probably played a little bit better than the final margin of six may show, but North Carolina playing in a lot of these close games would not shock me if by next week we maybe don't see North Carolina in the number one overall spot, given how some of these other teams have taken care of business and just some of the other games that some of these teams are playing. Gonzaga taking on Texas tonight, and then they also take on Kentucky on Sunday as well. So they're going to have their chances to pick up some big wins. If they go 2-0, I think pretty clearly they will be the number one team in the country. Houston has just manhandled any team that's in its way, albeit the Cougars haven't played anybody so far, but they are certainly taking care of business like you would expect a team that has national championship aspirations. And if you look around at a lot of power rankings as well, you will see Houston as the number one team in the country for this season. But really right now, it's looking like Duke has been the most impressive team out of the ACC, and that includes their loss on the night to Kansas, the reigning defending champions right now. Just looking at KenPom real quick. In fact, the highest rated team in the ACC, and again, not a whole lot to take away from early KenPom rankings, but it is Virginia. Virginia right now 2-0. They'll play Baylor on Friday. You know, we've got a really, really awesome slate of games this week. I'm going to preview a bunch of them with Brian Hanley on Friday's episode, we're going to give some of our picks for the weekend, some teams that maybe could get knocked off. But tonight we've got number 2 Gonzaga against number 11 Texas. If you're listening on Wednesday, obviously if you're after that, then the game has already happened. Sunday, actually, let's go to Friday real quick. Indiana takes on Xavier. Then we've got number 5 Baylor going up against number 13 Virginia. Number 8 UCLA against number 19 Illinois. 3 awesome, awesome games. And then Sunday, it is Kentucky taking on Gonzaga, 4-2. And then Houston, number 3 team in the country, taking on Oregon. And that ushers us right in to Feast Week, my favorite week of the college basketball year. You know, some people love the first weekend of March Madness. For me, Feast Week is where it's at. It is the best week, especially in the regular season of college basketball. So gets you through an entire week with just great basketball, whether it's Maui, whether it's Atlantis, PK80. There's so much awesome basketball being played. Can't wait to break it down with all you guys. So if you're not subscribed already, do that right now. We're with you on this feed twice a week, breaking down the weekend and the week ahead in college basketball. I'll be back with Brian Hanley on Friday. We'll get you some of our thoughts on Gonzaga and Texas and everything that went down there and get you ready for an awesome college basketball weekend and the gambling slate ahead. We'll talk to you guys on Friday.